This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Good evening, or morning, rather. The music of the star. The music of the stars is on until high noon.
Yeah. I say, Sir Betsy, now you're in bed, come out here.
I can't. I'm in my nightwear.
Oh, well, never mind then. I don't want to tell you that your bedroom's supposed to be haunted. I don't suppose that'll worry you. Breakfast at 9, if you're alive to eat any. Good night.
Oh, I say, look here. I can't stay in here. I mean, my mother told me to keep away from the spirits. I say, hello, my good fellow. Hello. Oh, I...
Behind you. Look behind you.
No, 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 no,
squeak and the windows creak and the ceilings leak cause the roof's antique. If you hear a shriek and your legs feel weak, it's a haunted house. There's a dismal moan like a weird trombone and the old ham bone is suddenly thrown. You are all alone with a great unknown in the haunted house. There's only one good spirit, it's a spirit in the bottle. With shaking hands you pull the cork and pour some down your throttle. There's a clank of chains and a smell of drains and a gory stain where the duke was slain. If you've got chilblains and varicose veins in the haunted house. From the old oak beam hangs a corpse you seem to feel a wet stream with a sinister gleam. And you wake with a scream from a horrible dream of the haunted house. But a cavalier with a dreadful leer tries to disappear through the chiffonier. And you cling with fear to the chandelier. It's the haunted house. The air is full of clammy claws that clutch you by the collar. So gargle night and morning just in case you have to holler. There are lights and sights and awful frights in flesh-pinked tights. But at dead of night comes a woman in white. So you're quite all right in the haunted house. When the old church clock strikes 12, there's a knock with a sudden shock. You remember the lock on the door, there's a crock. Oh, why do you mock at the haunted house? It's as black as pitch and your eyeballs twitch in the darkest niche. It's a dirty witch and the lighting switch is out of reach in the haunted house. When the slavey spills the gravy, why is she so pallid? Something poked her in the pantry when she fetched the salad.
I'm filled with dread, yes, I'm nearly dead. I saw a head underneath my bed. Come out if you can, I can do with a man.
In the haunted house.
Thank you. Are you one of the frightened? Have you ever imagined someone was following you? Caught a glimpse of a strange face in the crowd behind you, and then that face mysteriously seems to be with you wherever you go? Sylvester Dodge had just such an experience. Walk with me a bit, and I'll tell you about Sylvester and his man in the raincoat. Sylvester Dodge was a man like you or me. He worked as a bookkeeper in a Wall Street office, and for many years he was saving for the day when he could afford his trip to Europe, away from ledgers and bank balances and adding machines. Finally, the last week of daily toil approached, and anticipation thrilled his fat little body as he boarded the Lexington Avenue local. The big vacation loomed on his horizon as the reward of a dreary lifetime. It was then that Sylvester Dodge first noticed the man in the raincoat with the curiously shaped umbrella. Something about the man made Sylvester shudder. The man's face was a deathly white, and the hands surrounding the handle of the umbrella were like great claws. The flesh of the fingers were horribly gnarled and ghastly green. Sylvester could not bear to look at him. But even in turning away, he felt the eyes of the man boring into his back like twin beams of awful light. You know the feeling, don't you? Someone who's looking at you, staring at you, eyeing you with such a terrible concentration that you want to scream or cry out, "Stop! Stop!" When the train reached the station, Sylvester rushed from his car like a man released from prison. The man in the subway had shocked him, but then again, you do meet all kinds of people in New York, don't you? And so Sylvester Dodge began the five-block walk to his office. The sun was out. April breezes caressed the stone buildings, and people hustled along with spring steps. But Sylvester had that curious feeling that I mentioned to you. Someone was following him. He felt eyes peering at his back, could feel somebody's interest and attention focused on his rounded body hurrying through the crowd. He found himself walking faster, faster. He stopped for a streetlight, panting for air. He turned. A deathly white face in the crowd bobbed like a Halloween skeleton and vanished. Sylvester Dodge whirled and raced across the street, his coat tails flying. He stopped again, a block away from his office, and flung a backward look. There was the man in the raincoat, waving his claw-like hand in greeting, the umbrella dangling from the wrist. Something pounded in Dodge's skull, and desperately he raced the remaining block and fell against the building wall, gasping for breath. He turned slowly, fighting for his reason. But no, there was the man with the raincoat, a scant 10 yards away, coming towards him. The ghastly face was smiling. The umbrella was outstretched, almost as if it was seeking something. Sylvester Dodge pushed out from the wall and left the protection of the building. At that precise moment, the grand piano that was being hoisted to the office on the fourth floor swung awkwardly on its pulley. The rope snapped, and its great weight crashed to the sidewalk, pinning Sylvester Dodge to his death. So you see, poor Sylvester tried to run away from his fate and dodged in the wrong direction, all because he had the silly notion that someone was following him. Well, I'll leave you here, my friend. Well, you don't think my face is so awfully white, do you? Oh, I'm so sorry. I seem to have dropped my umbrella. Would you mind very much handing it to me?
In the evening, out in the square, a man in a raincoat standing there. We met. smiled as we climbed on the old streetcar. I blushed when he asked, "Are you traveling far?" The next time we met, the sun shone all day. We walked and we talked till the evening was gray. Me out dancing, dancing till dawn. No happier couple had ever been born. I felt like a queen and he was my king. He borrowed some money to buy me a ring, but I'm still alone. The cards are all down. He's taken my money and skipped out of town. And now when I pass the place where we met, I'm wondering if I could forgive and forget. Though bitter is my heart and foolishly proud, I still keep on looking when out in a crowd for a man in a raincoat standing there with laughing eyes and dark brown hair.
The music of the stars on WRJN.
Well, good morning, everybody. I think our equipment has a bug in it, if you will. A bug. Maybe a two-legged bug. Good morning. I'm Lou Regani, and I see that I've done something to make it work. Resurrection Mary.
She's found in Chicago, but one of our city's ghosts is so popular, she's even had a song recorded about her story. Her home is along a stretch of South Archer Boulevard, in front of Resurrection Cemetery. The tale of Resurrection Mary serves as one of the best documented stories for Richard Crowe, who makes his living telling ghost stories.
Well, Resurrection Mary, during her life, was a very attractive young blonde Polish-American girl. And then she died suddenly in the early to mid-1930s, but she didn't let death stop her, so she would come back to party again and again. She would look for rides down Archer, attend dances at places like the Melody Mill Ballroom, but when the evening was over, she'd wind up back at Resurrection Cemetery. And many drivers had given rides to this ghostly girl, only to have her get out of the car or disappear right in the car as they were driving by the front gates.
One infamous resurrection story occurred in 1976 when a justice policeman was dispatched to investigate a report of a woman locked in the cemetery after hours. When the officer arrived, he discovered no woman, only handprints imprinted in the twisted bars of the gate. These bars attracted so much public attention, the cemetery removed that section of the gate to be straightened, which is how it looks today. The cemetery's explanation? A truck backed into the gate. No one else has been able to explain it, including parapsychologist Joe Triani.
I had an opportunity to talk to some people who witnessed Resurrection Mary, and these were people who, you know, they weren't kooks. They had an experience. One situation was rather shaken by the experience. It fits the typical description of what we refer to as the apparition or appearance of an apparition, but over the years, it's something that's really become ingrained in folklore.
was her birthday. I pulled her close and said, will I see you anymore? Then suddenly she asked for my sweater and said that she was very, very cold. I kissed her goodnight at her door and started home. Then thought about my sweater and went right back instead. I knocked at her door and a man appeared. I told why I'd come, then he said, my daughter, how can you be so cruel to come to me this way? My Lori left this world on her birthday. She died a year ago today. A strange force drew me to the graveyard. I stood in the dark. I saw the shadows wave, and then I looked and saw my sweater lying there upon her grave.
The music of the stars.
It must have happened to you at some time in your life. You meet a completely strange set of people. They come into your life just as suddenly as they leave, and they leave you to wonder for the rest of your days. Was it real? Did you dream them all up? And why were you chosen of all people to encounter them? Here. Have a glass of port while I tell you the strange story of Henry Harper, a traveling salesman. It was in Shanghai, I think, shortly after the Second World War, that Henry Harper had his curious experience. Now, Henry Harper was a rug salesman, which has very little to do with the story, except perhaps to explain that he was a man who was used to hotels, sleeping away from home, and constantly traveling in strange cities far from his native London. So it was that Henry Harper found himself in an obscure Shanghai hotel, a guest for one night. In the morning, he had an important appointment with one of the wealthiest dealers in the city. Henry Harper was tired. The noisy, jostling Shanghai streets, a veritable melting pot of races, creeds, and colors, had given him a headache. His eyeballs were scorched from the afternoon sun. So it was that when night came, Henry Harper was more than ready for bed. He'd unpacked all his luggage, attired himself in pajamas, and read himself to sleep, as has been his custom for many years. But he had fallen asleep with the lights on. It was perhaps an hour or two later that Henry Harper stirred restlessly in his bed. His eyes were still closed, but a curious scratching noise came to his ears. Now, Shanghai street noises had abated somewhat. Now the scratching sound filled the tiny hotel room. Henry Harper sat erect peevishly and opened his eyes to see what the disturbance was. Well, he was hardly prepared for the sight that greeted him. Seated at the dresser in the room, just at the foot of his bed, her back to him, was a lovely Eurasian woman, busily combing her hair as nice as you please. The woman's hair was fantastically long, its black length trailing down her shoulders to the floor. Henry Harper could only gape as the comb in the lady's hand ran briskly through the beautiful hair with easy feminine strokes. It was the noise of the comb drawing through the hair that had awakened Henry Harper. Before he could open his mouth to speak to the lady, she encountered some difficulty. The comb became snarled in the clump of her hair. Without a moment's hesitation, the lady lifted her head off her shoulders and disentangled the comb from her hair. Henry Harper had seen enough. With terror chilling his brain, he sprang out of bed and flung into the room next to his like a wild man. Four bland Chinese were seated round a deal table having a quiet game of cards. Henry screamed at them about the woman in his room who had removed her head before his very eyes. The four Chinese smiled up at Henry Harper. "Oh, that," they said in chorus. "That's nothing. We can all do that." Whereupon they all, in turn, lifted their heads off their shoulders. So you see, Henry Harper had quite an experience. Of course, no one at the sanitarium believes this, but there you are. I suppose people always expect traveling salesmen to have a lot of funny stories to tell. Oh, by the way, help yourself to a cigar while I step through the wall here and go down to the cellar for another bottle of port. I do hate to take the long way.
The ghost of Anne Boleyn walks, I declare.
He declares.
For Anne Boleyn was once King Henry's wife.
King Henry's wife.
Until he made the headsman Bob her heir.
Bob her heir.
Ah, yes, he did her wrong long years ago.
Long years ago.
And she comes up at night to tell him so.
So, so, so.
With her
head
tucked. Underneath her arm she walks the bloody tower with her head
tucked
underneath her arm at the midnight hour. She comes to haunt King Henry, she means giving him what for.
What for?
Gadzook, she's going to tell him off for having spilt her gore.
Her gore.
And just in case the headsman wants to give her an encore, she has her head tucked underneath her arm. Sometimes gay King Henry gives a spread.
Gives a spread.
For all his pals and gals, a ghostly crew.
A ghostly crew.
The headsman carves the joint and cuts the bread.
And cuts the bread.
Then in comes Anne Boleyn to queer the do.
To queer the do.
She holds her head up with a wild war whoop.
Blue, blue, blue.
And Henry says, don't drop it in the soup.
Soup, soup,
with her head
tucked
underneath her arm, she walks the bloody tower. With her
head
tucked underneath her arm at the midnight hour. The sentries think that it's a football that she carries in. And when they've had a few, they shout, his army going to win? They think that it's Red Grange instead of poor old Anne Boleyn. With their head tucked underneath their arm. Along the drafty corridors for miles and miles she goes.
She goes.
She often catches cold, poor thing, it's cold there when it blows.
It blows.
And it's awfully awkward for the Queen to have to blow her nose. With her head tucked underneath her arm. With her head tucked underneath her arm.
That is Rudy Valley, really. This is Mel Torme and Fred Waring and the Pennsylvanians. Music by Miklos Rozsa for Spellbound, an Oscar winner.
Hitchcock, as most of us know, was known for exploring the dark side of human behavior. In particular, he had a well-known fascination with the deepest, darkest corners of the human mind. Coming up next, we've got a Hitchcock thriller specifically about the subconscious from United Artists in 1945. It's Spellbound. Ingrid Bergman stars as a successful psychoanalyst working at a psychiatric hospital in Vermont. One of her colleagues, played by Gregory Peck, confesses he may have committed a murder, but he's not sure. He has amnesia. So Bergman sets out to figure out if he did or didn't, and if he didn't commit the murder, then who did? The truth, it turns out, may come from Peck's dreams. And to let the audience inside, Alfred Hitchcock created some of the most imaginatively produced dream sequences ever put on film. To help create an appropriate atmosphere for the dreams, Hitchcock brought in the great surrealist painter Salvador Dali. As you might expect, having a world-famous artist like Dali create sets for a movie did not come cheap, but Hitchcock managed to convince the man who wrote the checks, producer David O. Selznick, that the results and the publicity of having Dali involved with this production would be worth the expense. As usual, Hitchcock was correct. From 1945 and featuring Leo G. Carroll, part of Sundays with Hitch, here's Spellbound.
You're holding me spellbound. I am yours, heart and soul. What can it be? This magic power that you control. I always feel spellbound every time you are near. My senses reel. I melt completely when you appear. You thrill me so much. It's just like the touch of April when winter is through. It wasn't so bad till I kissed you. Now I can't resist you. I know that I'll stay spellbound. Love will keep me that way. Oh, how I pray I'll hold you spellbound someday. So much, it's just like the touch of April when winter is through. It wasn't so bad till I kissed you. Now I can't resist you. I know that I'll stay spellbound. Love will keep me that way. Oh, how I pray I'll hold you spellbound, spellbound someday.
As Mel Torme on Coral Records. Here's Coleman Hawkins.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of great music from Miklos Rozsa, Spellbound, 1945, Best Picture Oscar. That's not the only time there was great music from a horror movie. We'll have more. Well, it's not really a horror movie, but here's Bob Osborne to talk a bit about it.
The director of this movie, Alfred Hitchcock, and its producer, David O. Selznick, had asked music composer Miklos Rozsa to create a really unusual sound, something new for the score of the film. One reason Rozsa incorporated the sound of a theremin, an electronic instrument which produces that kind of eerie, whining tone you heard. Well, Hitchcock and Selznick loved what they heard on this film, but they weren't so happy when Rozsa later used the sound of the theremin on his next movie, which was The Lost Weekend. Selznick was outraged. Rozsa tried to simmer him down, though, by pointing out that in Spellbound, Rozsa had also used the violin, the oboe, and the clarinet as well. Didn't work. Selznick was angry, mainly because Spellbound was made and the theremin used before The Lost Weekend, but both movies opened about the same time and gave many the impression that maybe Selznick had copied the music of another motion picture rather than the other way around. I mean, it was actually Billy Wilder copying Selznick and Hitchcock. Up next, our marathon of Best Picture Academy Award nominees from the movie year of 1945 rolls on.
This is the voice of the uninvited.
It's coming from downstairs.
It comes from everywhere and nowhere.
A house of terror on the haunted cliffs of Cornwall, where the uninvited walk unseen by men. Yet a cat arches its back in fright. Flowers are withered by the touch of an unseen, malignant hand. Candles flicker and die as a ghostly chill fills the air, and the living are clutched by the icy horror of the restless dead.
Stop, Pamela. Don't go near that door.
The Uninvited, Dorothy McCardle's gripping novel of the supernatural, comes to the screen, starring Rayma Land, Ruth Hussey, Donald Crisp, with Cornelia Otis Skinner, and introducing the exciting beauty of Gail Russell, whose first love is shadowed by the specters of the past.
Stella, what is it?
Are you ill, Stella?
Quiet. Leave her alone.
Oregon. Oregon.
Stop her, Scott.
Shh. She's in a trance. I saw this happen once before at a seance. I thought it was a fake.
But this isn't.
I know. It's dangerous.
Please get out of this house now.
Now lie there quietly. I'm not afraid of anything here.
Then be afraid. Be afraid for heaven's sake. When you were a little child, the evils of this house reached out for you. Stella, go! Go!
Oscar-winning song from 1944 from The Uninvited.
Remember.
We're just getting started on the Music of the Stars. I'm Lou Regani, and we're on till high noon Central Daylight Time. Daylight. From WRJN, Racine, and worldwide at civicmedia.us. Happy Halloween. Back in a moment.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.